completing our month of digital photography with a discussion of digital asset management or how to manage your photos and videos in the computer world.
Geek Speaks podcast and website are brought to you by GNI, a full-featured web hosting facility that provides co-location services and high-bandwidth connectivity. More information about GNI is available at www.gnihosting.com.
It's Friday, September 30th, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California, and it's time now, of course, for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, on our program, after a spot of geek news, we're speaking with Shane Bowman, the Chief User Experience Architect for iView Media, a digital asset software company, all about managing your photos and videos on your computer. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or, of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for NetCell, Myers Elam, Technical Trainer for Surf Control.
What was my name again?
Myers, I think.
Miles.
Thank you.
Miles Elam, Technical Trainer for Surf Control and Phonetic Repairer.
Like Myers Rum.
We also have in here Drew Meyer, who I want to say works for Adaptic, but actually I want to say you don't.
What's going on? Well, I'm on my way to another storage company called Network Appliance. I'm going to be starting there in about a week.
So is today your last day at Adaptic?
Today is my last day of Adaptic.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm kind of sad.
Well,
are you?
It's not a bad thing. I chose to leave, and I bear no ill will to Adaptic or anything like that, and I'm looking forward to the next step.
Is it a movement up in your career, if you will?
Yeah, it's a move forward.
Well, congratulations, and I hope that you can still come to the Geek Speak and be a part of it.
I hope. I don't know what the schedule is going to be like, so that
quit the job now.
maybe we can work with that.
We'll see how it goes. I'll start with Sean on news today.
Yeah, Chi Mei Optoelectronics, CMO, claimed it has developed a 56-inch LCD TV that is the world's highest resolution TV. This quad full-length high-definition QFHD panel is an HDTV standard, which is high definition. Why don't you love all these?
Wow.
these abbreviations, what? And acronyms. So there are no acronyms here. But
at some point, I feel like you're just going to start using verbs I don't understand and we'll be totally lost.
Give it another few years. Yeah. So this thing features 8.29 million pixels. So high definition resolution is 1920 by 1080. This thing does 3840 by 2160.
Well, if a TV source is not going to be that good, why do you need so many pixels? What does it do? Like make things up?
It's so you can see all of the zits on the television anchorman.
No, but I mean you got a camera. The camera's doing HD, and this thing's better than the camera. So where's this magic new quality coming
because
from?
Because it's bigger. It's 56
bigger,
inches.
Better, faster.
Maybe if you ran your computer on it, your video card could support it.
Sean, I see you contacted.
Well, think about it. As LCD grows in size, the pixels are
bigger.
Yeah, you're stretching pixels, and this thing, you're not losing any quality.
We start getting closer and closer to the resolution that you would see in the movie theater. Just those, instead of having that big screen, the resolution that's at the same resolution, just a smaller screen.
So, Sean, I think we should contact them and ask them to send you a demo so you can figure this out. Don't you think?
I don't have room for a TV that. Of course I do.
You have room.
But you know what they're going to say. Yeah, and you guys are who? Geek Speak?
You're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio. Miles, or Myers, what did I call you?
Myers.
Myers.
How long have we known each other?
You're reading ahead again. Long. You're saying Miles Elam Drew Myers.
Like, yeah, I just was
but I noticed you didn't say Myers, Drew Miles. Myers Elam. Yeah,
all right, on your little Zaros. Is, what is that?
Yeah, Zaris.
Zaris.
The PDA that Sharp is no longer making.
Aw. You got a PDA in front of you, and you're reading your news from it.
Yes.
Talk about geeky.
It's, it's lighter than a laptop, man.
And
your arm's going to break from that notebook.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I could get wireless for it, but, you know.
Yeah. Okay, what's your news story? And I won't ask stuff that's in the bottom of the news story, so you don't have to scroll down a little. Don't walk out the door, please.
A group called Liftport Group Incorporated has passed a milestone. They have a robot climber that has climbed the 1,000-foot mark. This is a milestone in the space elevator race.
Okay. I was imagining a rock face and something climbing it. Okay.
Right. A space elevator being something we've talked about on the show before, which is an item that would be 100,000 kilometers long. And the big deal was that carbon nanotubes, when they were discovered, found that they had a theoretical strength to be able to do this.
Right.
And the advantage to having a space elevator is that you don't have to use rockets to go up. It's much cheaper, much more convenient. And, I mean, an obvious advantage to a space elevator is that you don't have... If you've ever seen, for example, the space shuttle take off, you see that huge plume coming out the back. That's not
good
great
stuff.
Yeah. And these folks have used a composite fiberglass for the prototype that was 1,000 feet long and suspended by a 4-meter diameter balloon, and just carried a battery pack and climbed up the ribbon. And so that's basically this first step, the little baby steps on the way to getting the full space elevator.
All right. Thanks, Miles. And it's, of course, not on a strand that's in in an average of geosynchronous orbit. It's just climbing test strands. But the point
right,
is
in Washington State,
Drew, hi.
Good morning.
Mr. Former Adaptec, what's up?
Well, BitTorrent has just received $9 million in venture, just about $9 million in venture capital money, which is interesting because BitTorrent is, to date, the most successful, or some would say the largest, peer-to-peer traffic application on the Internet, where you can connect to somebody else's computer and download software, and it's over a distributed network across the Internet. And this is what everybody's heard about Napster. Most people have heard about Napster and Napster, how they got shut down, were in trouble, because you were downloading an entire file from somebody else's computer. BitTorrent breaks the files up, spreads them all across the Internet so that no one person is actually providing the entire file.
Okay, but
so it's legal.
But the legality of it's aside, one of the things about BitTorrent that's so interesting is that the technology itself is a wonderful technology, and it's used for a lot of things. When you have a large file that a lot of people want, use BitTorrent to distribute it. Linux is distributing, most Linux distributions are distributing their binary as, and even their source as BitTorrent. Ways. So it's a really great way to share content online. That's the reason why it's such a wonderful, why they're getting venture capital. They're not getting venture capital because they're able to, you know, supersede copyright or anything like that.
In fact, the original author of BitTorrent is very much a proponent of copyright law. He's not trying to rip them off.
Right. It just happens so that it's a very convenient way to rip off content, which is a shame. I mean, that's probably the biggest uses of the form.
I don't know about that. I mean, because you have been talking about downloading Linux by it, and it has a lot of legitimate uses. It's not.
But I think what Drew is saying is that most successful stealing of software and music and films right now is happening over the BitTorrent.
Well, about 33% of all peer-to-peer traffic is running on BitTorrent, according to some research.
But who knows how much of that is sharing content?
Right, but there was another one that was actually, in terms of illegal content sharing, that had beaten BitTorrent. I've forgotten the name, however.
There was a whole bunch of them after Napster, but
was it eDonkey?
eDonkey is
that's the one I was trying to.
But that one's gone away now.
They've closed. Yeah.
They closed
shop. Really?
Yep. This week.
Yeah. And Microsoft's got one in their own research labs called Avalanche, but it's never been released. So BitTorrent's kind of on the top, which I think is why these guys are giving them some money. We'll see.
Quite a bit of money. Thank you very much for that, Sean. Yeah, I'll go with you.
Nielsen Net Ratings, which is the global leader in internet media and market research, have. Released new figures on Americans with broadband access.
What does it look like?
And it has reached 42% of the U.S. population. as of August.
That's pretty good.
It's increasing about 16% this year so far. In January of 2005, 103.8 million Americans had broadband access, and by August, it had grown to 120.8 million.
All right. Well,
you said 42% of people with a PC.
42% of the U.S. population.
128 million people.
120.8 million.
Wow. Impressive.
Thank you, Sean, for that.
Yep.
Miles, Mr. DSL at home, bandwidth, part of the Nielsen's ratings. What's up?
It's good to be in the router business.
Yeah, it's good to be in the router business.
Skype, the voice over IP service,
yeah,
is adding in their own handset. It's a cordless handset that you plug the base station into a USB jack, mm-hmm. and so it acts very much like you have a normal phone. In other words, it doesn't have that extra bit of having to be in front of a computer,
Do you plug this in the USB and then you plug a phone into this, or is it a phone by itself?
No, they sell the actual cordless handset.
It's interesting you bring that up as the last news story of the day. Sorry that we're going to stop here, but I want to get to the show. Next week, we're talking about voice over IP from my cousin, Greg Troxell, who runs a large voice over IP network in the Central Valley. He's going to talk about the new features and functionality replacing traditional phone, maybe. He'll probably know a bit about Skype and
a little nepotism
hardware.
There, huh?
A little bit of nepotism. Hey, you know,
going on here.
There's a reason I got this show. You know, my father was station manager at the time. Talk about nepotism. It runs in the Geek Speak line. In any case.
But we're really not proud of that.
I'm proud of that. So, yeah, voice over IP next week on Geek Speak, 10 o'clock on Friday morning.
That should be interesting.
Yeah, I think it will be. And
we're going to do.
I want to see the Skype stuff. Maybe we should contact Skype and see if we can get a copy of one of these hardware things.
And if a caller is coming in, for example, the caller ID shows up on the handset.
Oh,
it's
nice.
All integrated. Doing over the internet.
I know the PR person that links us. You know what we could do is get it to Dee Dee out in New York, and she could use this thing to go on
the
talk on the radio.
Finally succeed.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's being done by Linksys. Sorry, I forgot.
Yeah,
the hardware, right,
of course.
The Linksys
right.
Cordless Internet Telephony Kit.
Nice.
Perfect thing for Linksys to do. Geeks, thank you for the news today. Drew, I know that you got to take off. I appreciate you being here.
Oops.
That's my cell phone. I'm going to hang up on the person. Drew, you have to take off to get to your new job?
I do. I need
get
to
rid
do
of your old job,
tidy up some stuff, so thanks for letting me come in quickly
thank
today.
Thank you very much for staying with us for the news.
And I'm sorry I can't make it, because I'd love to talk about storage with the guests.
Well,
guest
we're not talking about storage. We're talking about digital asset management. Now, there is a big part of it that's storage, but in next month at some point, Sean's setting up a storage show about personal storage, hardware and such. But with Shane Bowman, who we're talking about with right now, he's the chief user experience architect for iView Media, and iView Media produces software for digital asset management. And Shane, you join us now from the East Coast, I believe, right?
That's right. I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, hello, Shane, and welcome to Geek Speak. I appreciate you being here this morning with us. Shane, you're the architect of this package that's provided by the company that you're kind of work for or contract for. But let's talk about digital asset management generically for a moment. What do we really mean when we say digital asset management?
Well, generically, I mean it just refers to any software program or any kind of set of procedures facilitated by software designed to help you manage any amount of digital media that you may have. You know, that could be images, audio, video, personal multimedia files, or it could be, you know, Word documents or PowerPoint files or, you know, just about any kind of digital file that you need to manage. I like to think of these programs as sort of like another layer on top of your operating system.
So why can't the operating system do it by itself? I mean, that's a big part of the operating system is making folders and searching for things. And why do you have to have an add-on application that does your management?
Well, the operating system is really designed for, for better or for worse, for you to, using the, folder metaphor, to hierarchically store files. Digital asset management programs, good ones, allow you to look at media across a number of storage devices. Whether that's removable media, maybe there for a moment, or, whether it's a RAID array of hard drives. So it kind of facilitates creating a specific container of searchable media, right?
Right.
So it's not everything on your hard drive. It's specifically a container. It could be just a database of images, or it could be a database of all your digital media.
Okay, so iView does this for photographs and video clips?
It actually does it for 128 different file formats.
Oh, wow.
That we support 50 image file formats, as well as, you know, 80 different video, audio, text, HTML, fonts, desktop publishing formats such as PDF, Adobe Illustrator, EPS files.
Oh, okay.
InDesign, Quark.
You would say digital assets, actually.
That's right.
So what is it, I mean, let's talk, in the sense we're doing a month of photography, or finishing a month of photography on GeekSpeak, let's talk about it from the photo perspective. People seem to be collecting photographs very quickly on their computers, and they want to add information like who's in the picture or what vacation they were on when they took it. This information is, we call it metadata.
Right.
How does it work in your system? Where is that stuff stored? How do you share it later on, that kind of thing?
Well, let's talk just 2 seconds really quickly about what iView does. iView facilitates what we call a creation of a catalog. Catalog is really just a database container, right? When you add any asset to the catalog, in the case of digital images, when you add digital images to catalog, iView extracts all existing metadata from the file and stores it in the catalog.
Including, like, the camera settings?
That's right, the EXIF data, which is the metadata that's stored in the image, with each image, at the moment of capture, right? So that's stuff like ISO, aperture, the shutter speed, that sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another important piece of data stored is the capture date and time. Assuming you've got your, you know, set up on your camera set up properly, it knows exactly, every image has the information inside of it as to the time it was captured, right? So when you import into iView, iView extracts all of this EXIF data, right? And if there's any IPTC data or XMP data, it extracts it as well. IPTC is the metadata that was created by the news industry, right, for the digital transmission of images before that really got to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So most people know this as the file info dialog in Photoshop, right? So
right. You
open up an image and there's, you know, places to add keywords and descriptions and things like that. IPTC was the first standard of this type and has really now kind of emerged as, you know, the standard for describing photos using keywords and descriptions and people and locations and that kind of information. I mean, even services like Flickr now support IPTC.
Right. And Flickr is an online photo sharing and archiving site, flickr.com without the E in it. So your solution, one thing I noticed is that it's kind of expensive. What's your market? What's your target market? Is it home users?
No, it's professional photographers. And creative professionals is what we like to say. I mean, there are asset management tools, specifically, you know, usually in a vertical like photos, that are, you know, $40 or $50. But they're not really built to handle more than, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 images at best.
What can you handle in one catalog?
Yeah, you know, in their database. They're, you know, those are really built for people, mom and pops, who need to, you know, import some images and, you know, make a few prints, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Whereas the professional photographer, you know, without blinking an eye, could, you know, create 10, 20,000 images just for one shoot, right?
Right.
And so, you know, over the course of a year, might easily produce, you know, upwards of 500 to 750,000 images. So they need a robust solution, and, you know, at $200, it's relatively inexpensive for the professional.
Right. And possibly for the enthusiast as well.
Exactly.
To manage something like this. Now, you were talking about the smaller apps maybe don't have the kind of size or ability to manage a catalog of a large size.
That's
your
right.
system, how many files can you manage in one catalog?
Each catalog can manage up to 128,000 assets.
Mm-hmm.
And you
and
can
still
create
run
an
okay?
I'm sorry?
And still run all right? The application will still function? Okay.
Absolutely. And you can create as many catalogs as you want.
Nice.
So, and iView, assuming you've stored your catalogs in a particular way, all in one folder, iView can search across catalogs that aren't even open.
Oh, nice.
So you could do a find, you know, say find you know, all images taken in San Francisco with, you know, bridge keyword across all catalogs in this folder.
Mm-hmm.
What about
assigning keywords and meta information in rapidness? Like when you go to, let's say, a photographer is taking shots of a wedding and they know the bride and the groom and the parents' names of the bride and the groom and want to assign those keywords so that they can quickly search with the client all the people at the wedding. Like, let me see all the pictures of the groom's father, for example. How easy is it to manage, like, assigning photos to categories or keywords, I guess it's more called?
Sure, or any metadata description for that matter. Usually what professionals do in their workflow is, you know, once they import all the images, they select all of them and do sort of a batch assignment of information that applies to all the images. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's usually things like location, author, you know, subject, that kind of thing, right? And then they go through and image by image assign keywords. In iView, it's very easy to set up a list of keywords, right? In the organized panel, which is a panel that we've created to help you sort and annotate at the same time, depending on how many keywords you want to predefine, you just predefine a list of keywords, and then you just drag and drop onto the list.
Right on. Well, I have to say that the one thing that I saw is kind of a part of iView that I haven't liked that I've looked at is actually that one feature of assigning keywords. I have a large architecture of keyword assignments that I kind of took over from Photoshop Elements 3, which has some folder hierarchies. Now, they have a major problem with the amount of files they can actually handle, though Adobe just released Photoshop Elements 4, or is about to release something like that. In any case, one thing that I noticed about yours is that you can't have really thousands of keywords because you don't have a hierarchical list of them. So I'm hoping that at some point you produce a better interface for that and allow that kind of support to occur. I know it's a little difficult because you can't have hierarchies inside the EXIF data, and of course the EXIF data is what you're emulating with photos because you write back to it. So you'd have to figure out some way to manage that. I look forward to that in a new feature of your application. Other than that, I'm really impressed with the app. I think it's great in a lot of ways. The user experience is wonderful. You don't feel like you're lost in this application. You really know where you are, and you know how it works. So I like those aspects of it. Shane, do you want to say anything about the program prior to inviting people to call in?
Yeah, well, I did want to add a little bit to the hierarchical issue.
Yeah, please.
Is we do have something in the catalog called Catalog Set, which allows you to create hierarchies. And in that respect, you know, when you add a keyword, a keyword is just a one-to-one association.
Right, it's just a text phrase that you want, you know, some kind of phrase that you want to put to the file.
Exactly. And when you assign something to a hierarchy, you're, you know, inheriting all the parent-child relationships of the hierarchy.
Right.
Right? Somewhere in the near future, down the road, there is going to be an enhancement to the keywords and the vocabulary and the hierarchical relationships of keywording.
Great.
So
But right now you have category set. So tell me about how that works. Would that achieve the purpose?
We originally created catalog sets to be an emulation of the concept of albums or playlists, something where you wanted to create a group of files where you had an explicit order, right?
Okay.
And so you could take 100 audio files, drop them into a set, and which is really just a sort of an open-ended name for whatever it is you're putting in there, right? If it was audio files, you could think of this as a playlist.
Right.
You put them in there, and you could begin to sort them in a very specific way and then, you know, play it back over and over and over. It'd be the same thing with video files or even photos for slideshows, right?
Right.
However, you could do the same thing in terms of using it as a categorization system. Right, where you could create hierarchical sets where it's like Major League Baseball, American League, Boston,
right.
Red Sox, player name, game name, that kind of thing. And you could create a really complex organizational system that really no metadata system that exists, a standards metadata system, that could support something like that.
Right.
Right. So we gave users a kind of a way to develop their own freeform method that would supplement the existing standards.
That makes sense. And also you can, of course, show those things as slideshows or in the sense of music files. You could play them as a song list.
Exactly.
Very cool. We are speaking with Shane Bowman about digital asset management, specifically about the application iView Media and iView Media Pro. Shane's available to answer questions and comments as well as Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland and myself can answer questions. We're going to try to stay on photography today. Photography, digital asset management. I welcome you to call in. I'll give the numbers in just a second. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
The Center for Agroecology and Sustainable Farming presents Fair Trade Farmers from Thailand, who will speak on their experiences using fair trade practices to support organic farming methods and sustainable community development on Wednesday, October 5th at 5 p.m. at 221 Interdisciplinary Sciences Building on the UCSC campus. Information is at 227-6437.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxel. That was Miles Elam. We also have Sean Cleveland. We are talking with Shane Bowman about digital asset management and photography. You're welcome. And just general digital asset management. You're welcome to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, that's only in California. And if you're outside of California and you want to call us without doing a long distance phone, please use the internet. Geekspeak.org. Click on Contact Us. Community Alliance with Family Farmers provided support for this program, buying fresh and local produce from farmers, markets, CSAs, retailers, and restaurants supports the local economy. Buy fresh, buy local campaign at 761-8507 or online at caff.org. If you're interested in online stuff, KUSP's website's a great resource, kusp.org. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301.
This week in This American Life.
I cannot fathom 14 days of this.
Our correspondent, David Rakoff, tries to fast, see if it leads to enlightenment.
Well, that's online stuff.
Or so he says to the doctor.
And online.
Well, what physically can I expect?
You'll undoubtedly lose muscle mass. You'll lose it from everywhere, certainly in your biceps, in your chest.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
You're listening to KUSP right now, and this is Geek Speak. In the air with me, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam. And on the phone with us from the East Coast is Shane Bowman. We're talking about digital asset management. I welcome you to join the conversation. The phone number is 476-2800, or in California, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're going to go ahead and go to someone who's been waiting a long time to talk to us. Barcroft, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, video blogger Barcroft?
Oh, yes, hi.
Hi. What's your question? Tyler, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure if I am supposed to be on or not.
You're on right now,
okay,
so what's the question?
Well, I was just talking about, I called because I was featured in the Good Times today, this week.
Okay.
Page 24, 25, so I wondered if you wanted to discuss that subject or not. I heard you say you wanted to stick with photography.
I would love to stick with photography right now. Please
well,
try
what are the does that include the ability to manage video as well as stills?
It is definitely an issue. Let's go ahead and take this call and switch it right over to Shane to talk about how you manage videos and archiving them and therefore also searching them. It's kind of a difficult topic. Barcroft, I'm going to go ahead and say goodbye to you. You're welcome to send us email and we can discuss more about your article and possibly have you on the show in the future.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much. So, Shane, yeah, how do you manage videos? I mean, actually, one of the ways I first heard about your company was from one of our extended geeks, Fred McPherson, who is really interested in having a large collection of his videos and being able to search and find them and index them and look at them. Do you do that, and how do you manage it? Because they're such large files.
Well, it's really no managing digital video from an asset management perspective is really no different than managing digital images. Maybe we should talk about this. Is the important thing to think about is when you actually add images or add a file to an iView catalog, Ivy doesn't store the entire file in the catalog. It just simply stores a reference to it, extracts the metadata, and creates a thumbnail, a proxy image.
And can you create a thumbnail of a video?
Yeah, well, the first frame of most video is blank, right? Mm-hmm. It's usually a black or maybe, you know, a trailers or something like that. It would be this little green, you know, MPAA statement. Well, with iView, when you have the image come in, the video, once it's in there, you can play it to a certain point and create a thumbnail from that particular keyframe or wherever it is you've stopped the file.
I see.
So it allows you to create a more meaningful thumbnail.
So not a video clip of it, really, but a thumbnail of it. So you kind of define what represents that video file.
Exactly. You just create a keyframe, which gets turned into a thumbnail, mm-hmm. and that is the sort of visual representation in the database, the proxy image.
Cool. Well, I think we actually have Fred on the phone, at least a Fred from Boulder Creek. Fred, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. It is our Fred. Hey,
it
Fred.
Is me.
So what's your question?
Well, you've partially answered it already. Shane's answered it. I want to be able to combine my video clips, using Final Cut Pro with other clips using digital images, and then have it all on a file, plus my sound, where I could have it all there and be able to work with it and keep track of it and add to it and eventually, produce a video using that technique. And I think it's possible using his software, and I just wonder if he could comment.
Absolutely. Part of the software's history goes back to the CEO and lead programmer of the product was, part of the... he was the lead developer for the interactive TV project of the BBC. A number of years ago, and one of the things this program helped facilitate was the management of video clips and stills that were being used in the production process, mm-hmm. right? So what you can do, and they even do some very similar things in the storyboarding process over at Disney. They'll take a lot of sketches or a series of animated sketches and run the clips together in a catalog set like we were talking about earlier, and then play the set as a slideshow, and iView in slideshow mode will play videos on screen. So if you have a sequence of them with no time in between them, you're just basically running video clips right into each other, and you can even include stills in the middle of all of that.
Now, the stills, can you determine the duration that they will display on screen?
Exactly. Oh, nice. You can determine the transition, the duration of each file in the middle of a slideshow.
Now, this is assuming that you have all those assets local so that you can access them and that they're not archived off on CD or something.
That's correct. I mean, I would assume that anybody doing live production like this would have the assets online, or available.
Mm-hmm.
To do something like that offline wouldn't make a lot of sense unless you're trying to get a rough cut using the keyframe.
Right.
Yeah, you need a whole...
It's entirely effort. Possible. As well, iView can load a background soundtrack behind the slideshow. You just put a MP3 file or any other kind of audio file at the beginning of your slideshow before you run it, and it loads that sound file as the background soundtrack.
Nice. So you can
get an idea of exactly how you can do all of this.
Now, you wouldn't be able to export that as some movie format, but this would be a way to loosely create your system, and you can slowly build it, and then you'd have all your assets, and then you have to put them in something like Final Cut and actually render it as a full film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fred, is that going to answer?
That answers it. I got to get one.
Right. Fred, well, so
thank
there you,
you
go, Shane. You sold one product. Fred, thanks for calling in, and thanks for helping to make the Digital Photography Month happen this year, and also for suggesting iView to have them on.
Thanks,
Fred.
Bye-bye.
Fred is one of the, local expert on flora and fauna, and is my geek for that kind of reference. I collect geeks, I guess, that have a lot of information about different technologies. And
some people collect bottle caps, you collect geeks.
That's right.
That's really interesting.
Sean, I didn't ask about hardware. Can you please quiet down? No.
Sorry, Lyle.
This is GeekSpeak on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, Drew Meyer left to go quit his job. We're speaking with Shane Bowman about digital asset management. We got one call online, which we're about to go to, but I'm going to welcome people to call in with other questions and comments about photography, digital asset management, and digital asset management in any way. You know, a big call that we get a lot is about audio, how to manage your audio, because people have large collections. Well, if you got a question about that, please give us a call.
Now,
the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Sean, sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to ask... it's really tough to rename files, especially if you've got a high-end digital camera and yeah. and you're really fast on the finger. You could, you know, fill up a lot of space quickly. And when you copy those files to your hard drive, you know, coming up with a good... I mean, I've got a pretty decent, I think, way of naming my pictures, but doing so takes a long time
yeah.
in Windows. I mean, one at
in
a time.
General. Oh, yeah,
copying, pasting, changing numbers, you know, so they're all unique. And I'm wondering, you have batch renaming capabilities in iView.
Yep.
Could you explain kind of how you would do that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, what we have is we have a feature that a batch rename feature. You would just select, once you've got all the files in your catalog, you select them all, go to batch rename. You can enter in a string of data that doesn't change, right? So let's say you put the date... a subject, the photographer's initials, and, you know, any other kind of relevant information. It could be the product SKU number of the images that you're shooting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the job number.
Right.
And you include that all as the fixed string, and then iView can attach a numeric incremental value.
Can iView look at the EXIF data and look at what the date of the file that it was taken and use that as part of the name?
Currently, we don't support using metadata values in the string.
In the renaming, uh-huh.
In the renaming string, but in an upcoming release,
good.
That will be a feature in the batch renaming.
Good. And one other thing, before I take this call from Watsonville, what is it that you... I noticed a major feature on your box is in a Windows environment, iView supports extensions through VBScript, and in the Apple environment, it supports it through AppleScript. So
yep.
It sounds like a lot of these things that if people wanted them and had the time and capabilities to extend the application, that's available, which is very nice when you're dealing with large collections of data. We're going to go to Watsonville. Patrick, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, my question starts with thanking you for having this subject. I own a digital photo lab in Watsonville, one of the independently owned Bay Photo locations, and we deal with people having a nightmare with managing their digital photos all the time. We teach a class on digital photography for the neophyte once a month, and half of our class.
When is it, and where is it, and how do you get in?
You get in by calling Bay Photo Watsonville. It's the last Wednesday night of every month. It's at our shop on Main Street. And it starts about 5 minutes after we close at 7, and it goes for about an hour and a half.
Does it cost money?
$10, but as okay. part of the $10, you get into our digital discount club, which gets you discounts on all kinds of groovy stuff. So,
all right. So, if you more information about this, these classes, just call the Watsonville Bay Photo shop. And your shop number, Patrick?
722-9072.
722-9022. 9072. Oh, sorry. Do it one more time.
722-9072.
All right.
We also had some other things to mention. Part of our website at watsonvillephoto.com, we've got some free downloads for batch file renaming. Your guests got a wonderful service he's offering by helping people with that. It is a huge issue trying to search for files on your computer just by those numbers that are assigned mm-hmm. by the cameras is, of course, really silly.
Right.
You can't find anything that way.
Especially when your camera resets it every time you load a new card in. That's a nightmare.
yeah.
Every time you take a photograph, it's the same ones, same
yeah.
names. So these tools work on Mac and Windows?
Yeah.
Okay, well, so there you go. Free. You know, last week we had some call up and go, how do I do batch renaming? For people that don't have a solution like iView and aren't going to buy it, please go ahead and go to Bay Photo's Watsonville store and download it. I guess Bay Photo has one website, right? BayPhoto.com?
Actually, no, it's WatsonvillePhoto.com.
WatsonvillePhoto.com to find free, wonderful features on renaming
yeah,
files.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, I think we'll try it out. Sean,
there's
that would
also
be
a brief bit of advice I want to give for your Mac users out there.
Please.
It's become a cliche in the photo finishing industry that somebody walks in the door with a CD they want you to print from, and it turns out to be an iMac-generated photo using iPhoto software, or the CD, rather. Then we actually charge a premium to deal with them because the file architecture that iPhoto creates is an impenetrable maze of folders within folders within folders within folders, and finally when you get inside, you find one photo.
Right.
There may be 100 in there.
Right.
So the amount of time it takes anybody working without a Mac to, with that CD is so huge that we have to charge a premium. So
okay,
I always try to suggest to people that rather than letting iPhoto burn your CD, just simply drag and drop yourself.
Right. Okay.
And then everything's fine. It's all easy.
Right. Lyle, well, Patrick, could I make a recommendation?
Yes, please, Shane.
Yeah. Well, if you took that CD of the iPhoto burned CD and just dropped the icon onto iView, iView would actually go through and just show you the images that are on the CD very quickly and allow you to bypass the folder structure.
So you could view the files. So it's going to go through, look for all the images, and then show them all to you. And then I guess from iView you could say export to this folder or copy.
All you'd have to do is hold down the, if you're a Mac user, you know, hold down the option key, and it would copy straight from the CD to your desktop.
Wonderful. Nice. iView sounds very groovy. How is it different than Picasa? It sounds a lot like what Picasa is doing.
Yeah, Picasa is one of those applications that I talked about earlier that were really built for the consumer that would tap out, you know, the level of images, you know, fewer than 5,000. I haven't used Picasa recently, so I couldn't speak to its performance level beyond, you know, that kind of those kinds of quantities. But it's really it's really not built for the professional grade, mm-hmm. you know, raw management and high end.
If you're currently interested in learning, if you're on a Windows environment and you're currently interested in learning what digital asset management tools are like, and you're not looking for that like end all solution that iView I think probably would support for you, go ahead and you can try to Picasa. It's free application.
Picasa.
It's free application from Google, and it works only on the Windows environment, and it reads RAW formats, and it's pretty great, but it's definitely not targeted for those consumer or prosumer lines. And you can find Picasa by going to Google. Patrick, I'm going to say goodbye to you and go to our next call.
Thank you so much, guys.
That was Patrick, owner and operator of the Watsonville Bay Photo Store in Watsonville, watsonvillephoto.com. And we're going to go now to, have we lost that person? I want to go to Dottie in Santa Cruz, but I think, Dottie, you there? Dottie is not. What a shame. Just ready to go. Maybe Dottie would call back. If you'd like to call in and ask us questions or about technology, specifically about photography and digital asset management, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We take calls today about digital asset management and photography in and anything in that realm. Why have one application to digital assets? Why not have your photo application, your video application, your audio archiving application?
Well, it's tedious to learn multiple applications over and over. I mean, it's essentially the same set of procedures, right? You know, you're trying to put all your media into a place where you can easily search and find the files you want when you want them. And, you know, with iView, you can dump 1,000 images on there, or you can dump 1,000 audio files. Or, in fact, I did was working on a project yesterday where I had more than 5,000 PDFs in there. So I don't really see the advantage of having to learn a new application every time. In fact, it would seem extremely tedious to me. So I think the advantage is, as well, is that you can have multiple types of media in one place. And so for graphic designers or multimedia creators, you can have your images, your text files, your design documents, your fonts, all in one place.
Man, I'm sold. let's get back to our topic earlier of nepotism. I just want to mention that my sister Marina's birthday is today, and happy birthday, Marina. And also, friends of the Geeks, Emerson and Maria Murray, gave birth this morning. I think Maria actually delivered at 2:23 a.m. I'm not sure if it's a boy or a girl, but congratulations to them. And we got a call, an email in from Santa Cruz, more on topic, from Suzanne. With iView, can I put select multiple photos to go into a category at once? So grab a whole bunch of photos and then put them into a category at once.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, all you would do is just do a shift select or a non-sequential selection using the command key and, you know, on Macs or the alt key and on Windows, and select a group of files and drag and drop it onto drag and drop it, you know, as we were talking earlier, into the organized panel onto any metadata field, or you can do the selection and annotate them all at once across multiple fields.
In the text area?
Yep, in right. the info panel.
In the info panel. Okay, so in that field, you can just type in something that was assigned all those. Nice.
Absolutely.
And do that, of course, it's operating specific, but on a Windows machine, it's the control key?
Well, it depends on what kind of selection you want to make.
Let's say I see a whole bunch of pictures, and like every third one or something is one I want to select. So I click on one, and then what do I hold down?
Well, on the Mac, it would be the Command key.
Okay.
And on Windows, it would be the Alt key.
Okay. And on the Mac, the Command key looks like a clover, sometimes called the Apple key.
Yeah, sometimes called the Apple key.
And that's a good feature for anybody, and that works in the operating systems as well, and all over the place. When you want to select multiple discrete files, just holding down that key in your operating system and clicking on the next one will select multiples, and then you can like throw them all in the trash can or recycling bin or open them all up if you want, but be careful about that.
Hey, Lowell, I got a tip for you real
Please,
quick.
Please, Shane.
You were talking earlier about how the camera resets the file names.
Yeah.
You know, every time you put the media card in.
Yeah.
What kind of camera are you using?
Well, I just see this in a lot. There's a lot of camera images
almost
that I see.
Every digital camera now has a function in the camera OS. It's a preference that you set that says series or reset or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what it is. On every camera, you can say indefinite. It's like indefinite sequential numbering or reset with every card. And so you just set it in the camera. So when you take your card out and, you know, take the images off and you stick the card back in, next time you start shooting, it picks up in the numbering in the numeric order in which it left off.
Nice.
Trust me, it's almost in every camera.
And it's very useful because then you're not going to override things. But would you recommend using that as the file name forever?
No, absolutely not. But at least it prevents you from having to create a new folder and put images 1 through 100 in it and naming that folder so that you don't have any file name collision on the desktop.
I don't know. When you're talking about different namings, though, like, I guess I'm also thinking in terms of Mac and their Spotlight, things like that. Why not name it according to that and just go by off of the metadata?
Well, because let's assume that you're not using Spotlight. You opened up a folder and there was 10 images in there, and all they had was the name. You'd actually have to do something, click on it, open it up, do something to know something about it, right? But if you had a descriptive file name, something that gave you maybe the photographer's initials, the date, you know, a six-digit date like, you know, 09-05-05, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a subject. It would be incredibly easy for you to know something about the file before you even touched it, opened it, looked at, you know, it's just a look and learn as opposed to having to explore it in some way, shape, or form.
Shane, I do, my camera, I think, does reset every time, but it doesn't matter to me because every time I import my images in, I rename them, and I always start with a date in the beginning, and that's for the purpose of most of the time you know about when a file was taken. You know, when was I on that vacation? Oh, yeah, September of 2005. Therefore, I can look at all my files. So I always use that date, and my format I use is the year, then the month, then the day, and that way when they're in a folder, they sort as they happened, if you will.
That's right.
Alphabetically. We don't have any callers on hold, so I'm going to invite you.
We do have an email.
Yes. Well, let me give out the phone numbers first.
Sure.
476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Sean, go ahead.
So Susan from Santa Cruz asked, with iView, can I put select multiple photos?
We just answered that, man.
Did we?
Yeah, you were talking to Emerson about the baby. Jeez.
Yeah.
No, yeah, we get to answer that.
So
she did have a second question, though.
I wanted to get to that.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead, Lyle.
Well, we answered her question really well. You basically do select them and you drag them over to the info panel on the left-hand side to the category that it wants. So we'll invite once again people to call in. Phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. But you were able to, Sean, find out that, of course, Emerson and Maria had a girl because they've known for a long time. Her name is Hannah. So congratulations to the Murrays on that. Miles?
Actually, a question. This is more having to do with semantics than the actual product, but our guest job title was User Experience Architect.
Mm-hmm.
How does that differ from User Interface Architect? Like, what was your contribution to this project?
Well,
what do you do?
Experience is really, what I do is I talk and listen to users.
Okay.
And not only specific challenges to using iView, but I try and understand the challenges of their workflow and their business and try and make sure that the experience of using iView will help supplement and enhance their workflow, their digital workflow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I was out at Photoshop World or I was recently out at National Geographic, I was really just charged with listening to their challenges. What are they exactly trying to do once they get the images in and work with them, and how do they reuse them, repurpose them, and how do the images flow through their organization? You know, because it'll come from a photographer to an editor to a story editor to a designer and then to an archivist, and they each have different needs.
Right.
And iView's powerful how can we say this? iView's its real powerful selling point, in my opinion, is its flexibility.
Right.
It's really good at the front end of the process, the middle and the back end. You know, if you some people use iView strictly as a back end storage and archiving solution. Other people use it as a front end utility to batch process and or batch annotate and organize their images, and then they get exported into an Oracle or FileMaker database.
What you're talking about, the differences in people's workflows, and we hear that term all the time, but the idea is that these applications fall in line in different spaces in the workflows. I'm going to go ahead and go to Santa Cruz. Demetrius, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Hello, yes, you're on.
Yeah, I got a quick question for you. Struggling back and forth with digital versus slide format, and recently came back from a trip to the Sierras and shot a bunch of pictures on slide, and I had them transferred professionally to a high-resolution disk. And the quality of the reproduction on the disk was just miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if it's a fault of
Was it just miserable, and as in there's no way this can be the quality that it should be?
Well, when I first viewed the slides or the pictures on the disk, I was very disappointed until I looked at the slides. And I have a digital camera. And even the high-resolution disk, which was shooting, was transferring data or capturing data at a higher rate than my digital camera. It wasn't as clear as my digital camera.
Okay, well, is it possible that you were looking at the preview of the image, not the actual image?
No, I was looking at the actual image.
Okay, what were you using, the Photoshop?
I wasn't looking at the thumbnails, no.
All right.
And so I guess my question is, if I'm transferring from a film format to a digital format, is there a difference or a degradation in the image quality than if I just shoot a digital format? In other words, if I take a picture with a digital camera and I take a picture with a slide camera and I have the slide transferred to digital and the image resolution is approximately the same, is there going to be a better image from the digital camera or a better image from the slide down to the digital?
Okay, thank you for the call. We got your question. We're going to go ahead and answer it.
Thank you.
Bye. Shane, you got an answer for him? Not really.
My
huh?
opinion would be is that the quality is going to be strictly based on the scanner.
Yeah. So the get scanner, a drum scanner, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have friends that, you know, shoot with high-end digital SLRs. They get good quality images, but they're still slaves to their film. They love their film. But they have these high-end scanners that give them these amazing 70-megabyte TIFFs.
So that's the trick. Get a good scanner. We're out of time on GeekSpeak. This is GeekSpeak. We're proudly sponsored by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering color printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. We've been talking with Shane Bowman of iView Media. Shane, thank you very much for being on GeekSpeak today.
Thanks a lot.
Shane has a wonderful blog about the same topic. You're welcome to go to geekspeak.com to learn more about that information.
Geekspeak.org.
Thanks, Miles. What would I do without you correcting me all day? The Geeks this morning, Sean Cleveland, that was Miles Elam, and Drew Meyer left us earlier. To answering the phones was Michael Lewis. Thank you all for listening to GeekSpeak. Those of you that called in, thanks for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. Who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Next week on GeekSpeak, we are speaking about what are we doing? Now, yes, we are finishing digital photography, and next week we're talking about new ways of using phones. I think that's a good way to define it, over the Internet. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Otto, on the web at kusp.org. Coming up next is Open Road with Matt Pierce, and at 1 p.m., Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang. For KUSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Thank you, and we'll see you next week on Geek Speak.